Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. We're giving Kevin a break today, and I'm talking to Mike Lejeune from the Game Changers Podcast. They were kind enough to have Kevin as a guest on their podcast, and today we're returning the favor by having Mike on ours. Our topic is what it takes to win your first government contract and common mistakes that contractors make in trying to win their first contract. We'll start by letting Mike introduce himself and explain a little bit about what he does.
So my name is Mike Lejeune, and I have been with RSM Federal for almost 6 years now. Josh and I, my partner, have been in this business together for, gosh, we've known each other almost 15 years, but we joined together formally with RSM a few years back. And RSM is our parent company. That's where all of our coaching and consulting kind of happens. But we also have the Federal Access Program, which is one of the main ways we serve our clients. So it's kind of a DIY program for people who want to get into government contracting. They don't necessarily need a consultant, but they need a lot of training. So they need videos and documents and templates. But out of that, one of the things that we spun off a couple of years ago was the Game Changers podcast. And that's really where most of our content comes from on, you know, how to win your first contracts and just the trials and tribulations of government contractors. And so every couple of weeks, we put out a new episode and we interview subject matter experts from literally all over the field. So I'll have bankers on here that specialize in government contracts, attorneys that are on here. And then I try to get some of the other market leaders in here and speakers, coaches, those kind of folks. You guys have been on a couple of times. Yep. Trying to get other people from the industry because I really want to work together with everybody in the industry. And then we try to talk to companies as well. So companies that are just doing well and saying, you know, what are the game changers? What are the secrets that you can help our clients with? Because people that are tuning into this, they just need to hear from people that are winning that, hey, it's the fundamentals. It's this, it's that, it's whatever it is. So they can get those kind of tips and tricks and stuff. So that's kind of what we're doing over here with RSM and the Game Changers podcast.
That's exactly why I wanted to make sure that we returned the favor and had you on the Contracting Officer podcast. You guys have a little bit different approach, but serving the same general market. I think some of our customers are the same type of companies, and some of our customers are people in a little bit different stage of the game, and they have perhaps different needs. Kevin had a great time talking to you guys when he was on your podcast, and I think we're going to have a good time here talking about some of the things you just alluded to, the basics, the foundations of how do you do this. One of the first things I want to talk about is what it takes to win your first contract. Lots of people start companies, and we know that the failure rate for new companies is pretty high. It's a tough business to get started, get over that hump. Mm-hmm. In the government business, there's even more hurdles because you can't just open your doors and say, come buy from me.
Right. Yeah, you know, the government market is really interesting because I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I don't want to steal his line, but I'll use it, and I'll quote him later. It's Mike McDermott. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, I think people think the barrier to entry is really high when it's really not. But the problem is staying in is what's hard. Because every time I turn around, there's a new company who just got in the game. And this is how it happens. Like 9 times out of 10, they got in because they were a government contractor. Let's say they were working for a Raytheon or a Lockheed Martin or whoever. They're working on site. And a client says, you know, if you did this, we'd buy from you. It's like something very similar to that. And so they get the bright idea after months of hearing that. They go start an LLC. They form their company. And then it's a small contract for maybe one person, maybe two people. They get in and now they're a government contractor. And they think, this is easy, man. This is so easy. And then they wake up and they're like, how do I get another one? I don't know how to get another one of these because I don't know anybody else because I'm working on site. And so we see that a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of jumping the gun there on some of the common mistakes, but they get in and they think, oh, this is going to be super easy when that's not the deal. Then there's the flip side of the coin where there are people who are probably in the military or they've heard that government contracting is a really good idea. So let me go down that path. Let me go get into government contracting. And they just think, oh, well, you know, I'm a service disabled veteran. I'm a, you know, fill in the socioeconomic status. Money's just going to rain down from the heavens. and it doesn't. And you know, like you were saying, you know, the failure rate is so high. You know, they say the failure rate is something like 86% in the first 5 years are going to fail. You know, the first thing that I always tell people is if you're going to get into government contracting, yes, the government buys everything on the planet that there is, but you need to find out if there's a market for what you sell. Plain and simple, you need, that is step number one. You need to go and do some research, find out, is there an actual market for what you sell? Now, yeah, they do buy toilet paper and they buy, you know, office supplies and all this kind of stuff. But is that stuff locked down on a contract vehicle you can't even get on?
Right.
You know, you need to go and do that research before you even get in. So that for me is the biggest one, is when you decide to get in, find out if there really is a market, what the market size is, what the real opportunities are. And from there, you can get into some of the more basic things. And I'll just rattle off a couple and then we can kind of go through.
Okay.
So let's say you find out there's a market. You need to get your ducks in order. It's really simple. The government is a big market, but it's also a small community. So if you start burning people, the odds are that government lifer in that chair is going to remember next time you come by and try to fill out an RFP. They're like, oh yeah, these are the folks that didn't even have business cards or whatever. So, you know, you need to get your ducks in order. You need a capability statement. You need a professional website, business cards, a government landing page, things that just make you look professional. You know, those are some really simple things. You can do all the things I just mentioned for less than $500. There's no excuse not to get those things done and get them out there and to start actually looking like you're a real company. Another thing I always do is start to look at, you know, where is your past performance going to come from? You know, if you were with another company, that will map over into this, but you need to be able to say, hey, we've done this, that, and the other for other clients, and this is how we can do it for you, that sort of thing. So you need to be able to get clear on what your past performance is. And then for me, this is one you'll probably zero in on, love. You need to start talking to contracting officers, having conversations, talking to the small business offices, those kind of folks, and just having conversations to figure out how do they buy what you sell. Again, if you're doing this and you're doing it for the first time, there's a lot of learning you just need to do in that first 3, 6, 9 months of being in the business. And these are the fundamentals. Another thing I always tell people is get some simple experience with RFPs. Don't worry about winning it. Look at the mechanics of an RFP. What are the components? What are the things that when you see an RFP, you go, oh, here are the gaps I need to fill for the next round. You may not even submit it, but just get in the process of looking at some to figure out what you're going to need to do. From there, I always tell people, look for easy wins like simplified acquisitions, credit card purchases, maybe even a pilot program that you can introduce into a prospective buyer, so that you can actually just get your feet wet. If you're still struggling with that, find some teaming partners. You know, find some folks that are already doing this that you can go to and say, hey, we can make you more competitive. This is how. Get your teaming partners put together and don't worry about it. Shelf your ego and don't worry about being a prime. Just worry about getting a contract. There, I was talking to a guy yesterday. He was like, I got a buddy of mine. He's never primed a contract in his life. He does $32 million a year. You don't ever have to prime a contract.
So let's talk about the list there. You laid out some really good points. Government folks, just like you as a consumer, you want to see some basic qualifications. If you're going to get your grass mowed, you probably have a better chance of signing up new customers if you have a truck that has your logo on the side of it, if you have a website, if you have any type of Better Business Bureau certification or something on there. That, like, there's some simple things that establish your credibility. And the government needs that as well. They're Absolutely. Not very good at the fly-by-night thing. We've talked about it on our podcast a bunch of times. The contracting officer has to do a responsibility determination before they can award a contract. And part of that responsibility is looking like you're a real business.
Yeah. Imagine that. There's just so many opportunities for small contracts. And that's where, to me, I see a lot of these newer companies, they're looking for the home run. It's like every time they go out, they're looking for, how do I get you know, a 5-year IDIQ, or which is no money anyway, but how do I get something like that? How do I get a 5-year something? How do I get, you know, a multi-million dollar whatever? And guess what? Most people don't hit that out of the gate.
You hinted at how difficult it is to write a proposal to an RFP and said, you know, get some reps reading these things and see what might be required. Your competitors, especially for the 5-year IDIQs, are professional companies that have had a lot of reps that probably hire outside professionals to help them with the proposal process.
Right.
It's not for the faint of heart. The first time through that, if you're not pulling some all-nighters at the end, you're a pretty amazing contractor because you've laid out everything and planned for it well. That proposal process can be brutal. So I like the idea of easy wins. Find some small things. Find, like your initial example, you're on a government site. They say, we're tired of dealing with this giant company. If you start your own company, we like you. We'd give you the work. So you get your first contract through some set aside or even a sole source arrangement because you kind of got the inside track. It's that second contract. Then what happens when you have to compete and actually write a proposal?
One of the coolest things that people don't realize is there's something called RFIs or sources sought. There'll be several different names.
Right, requests for information.
Most common. Yeah. Those are really where if I'm new to government contracting, that's actually where I want to spend more time than RFPs. And the reason is the RFIs are really cool because you can not only learn about what's coming out in the RFP, you get a chance to position, and we call it ghosting. You get a chance to kind of ghost in some capabilities to say, you know, if you're going to do this, you need a company with this sort of experience and this sort of solution, and it needs to have these types of certifications or whatever it may be. You get to kind of ghost in there stuff that's special to your company, that's differentiators. But you kind of get a peek at what the RFI is going to be like. I always tell people, you know, you ever seen an RFP and it comes out and you're like, oh, that was written for Lockheed Martin or whoever.
That wasn't an accident.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident. They've spent years responding to stuff saying, hey, this is what it should have in it. Yeah. You know, you should be doing that. And so when it hits the street, you're actually educated about it. Because we always say this, and if you listen to our podcast, maybe even once or twice, you'll probably hear us say, if the first time you heard about an RFP was on FedBizOps, you've already lost.
Yeah.
You probably already lost.
You've heard that on unless our podcast too. That's a universal truism right there.
Yeah. It's a total truth. That's not an opinion from the professionals here. You know, and it's just one of those things where most of those people have been watching that, listening, you know, to the client for years. You know, it's been written for somebody or wired for somebody. And you're going to have a hard time compete.
All right, we talked about some of the simple things that you can do to increase your chances of winning that first contract or the second contract or third contract. Let's shift to the other side of how you can increase your chances of losing. What are some of the classic mistakes you've seen that companies make that are trying to enter the government market or have just gotten into the government market?
Oh yeah, man, there's so many. I'll tell you one of the ones, I kind of talked a little bit about this earlier, is believing that your status, whatever it is, woman-owned, 8A, minority-owned, service-disabled, veteran-owned, whatever it is, thinking that that is your value. I see so many companies that when I say, hey, you know, I'm Michael June with RSM, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I'm a service-disabled. And I'm like, hang on, buddy, what do you do? And they're like, well, we're service. No, what do you do? And like, you can't get them out of that box. And again, it's they think the money's just going to rain down from the heavens. I don't care what certification you have. You've wasted time and energy getting it if that's the first thing you market.
Yep. You got to lead with the value and follow up with the status that makes it easier or gives them different pathways to award to you.
Yeah, you know, it's like, oh, by the way, we happen to be service disabled, 8A, XYZ, you know, whatever letters you want to throw in there. Those are all great on the tail end, but that's not how you open a conversation. And, you know, and here's the deal. The moment you open your mouth and say, oh, because here's how it'll happen. A contracting officer or someone will say, well, tell me what you do. And the moment you open your mouth and say, we're service disabled, veteran owned, 8A, woman owned, whatever, their eyes just roll back in their head and they're like, oh, so you're telling me you're like 100 other companies who are soliciting us for business who have no idea what they're doing. That's exactly what happens. You've not differentiated yourself. You've put yourself in the same bucket of everybody else who's made that mistake. And so it's an immediate turnoff to contracting officers, to teaming partners, to everyone else out there who thinks you're just looking for a handout.
I'll vouch for that. You have to be able to start out with, here's how I can solve your problems. And once you get their ear of maybe you actually can solve their problems, then you have the ability to get to, it's really easy to award to me because I'm 8A or service disabled veteran or something else that makes the government's job easier in actually getting you a contract. But if you start out with, hey, I don't really know what value I can provide you, but I happen to be easy to award to, like you said, eyes roll back. It's a turn off immediately.
Yeah. You know, so that's one of the first one I see out there. And there's three big ones, but I'm going to go kind of in order of the mistakes that I see. The second one that I see is whether it's their marketing material or their conversations, you've probably heard this before. They try to do everything. So like I'll look at a capability statement and it has like 37 NAICS codes on it. Like, what do you do?
So you're telling me you're a small business trying to get new business and you do all these things.
I have that. I always, when I see those, I immediately go to the Office Space moment where the Bobs are sitting there and they're going, so tell me again what you do. And like you're going over and over and over again on that question. And they're like, well, we do IT services and we do sanitation and we can clean up nuclear waste and we could, you know, send a rocket to the moon. You know, like there's all these things and they're like, What do you do well?
Mr. Not going to get any business here.
Exactly. You know, it's like, you know, what do you do really well? Because, you know, one of the things we always tell our clients is you only want a handful of NAICS codes in your capability statement. And when you go talk to somebody, don't even bring it. Don't even bring it with you when you go talk to a contracting officer. Find out during the conversation what's important to them, and then customize one with those five NAICS codes at the top and send them the customized version of it just for them.
That's great advice. And that's what you do. Great advice.
Because to me, it's like, you know, so Paul, you know, what's a big problem in your organization? You tell me what the problem is. Oh, you know what, Paul? We do a lot of things over here, but the top three have everything to do with what you just said,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You start going down that rabbit trail. And it's not being deceptive. It is customizing your sales pitch for your audience. Because you probably do a lot of these things and you probably do them all very well. But when you try to get out there and say, well, oh, we not only do IT infrastructure, we do send shuttles to the moon. You know, people are going to be like, I don't understand why I should work with you versus somebody who only does IT infrastructure and they're the best at it. And they're competitively priced, you know. Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. Their problem can be solved by your third best capability, right?
Yeah, exactly. that's what a great way to put it.
You got to tweak it a little bit to make it look like you're leading with the thing you do best and most is solve their problem.
Yeah, it's like if we were running a race on the track field and there were nine of us, we'd be eighth or ninth in this race, but we'd still get to the end. It's like, no. That's not attractive.
Not
whatsoever.
At all.
When you go in, you don't need to be kind of throwing up all your capabilities on top of people. You need to be talking about what's important to them. This is basic sales 101 stuff. This isn't even government. To be having a conversation to find out what's important to them before you start putting solutions in front of them. The third one that I'll mention is something that it's really a big pet peeve of mine is focusing on bringing in a consultant. I call them consultants in the industry. A lot of times, I don't want to say they're scam artists because that's not what they are. They do have some value. They just don't have a lot of value. It's folks that are probably like retired military and you're like the third or fourth client they've had and you're going to be like, hey, you know what? Let's pay this person. They're 12 grand a month. It's usually a lot of money because they're going to introduce you to some folks and you're going to get some easy wins. Now, let me say this.
The Rolodex consultant.
Yeah. If you're the first person they've done this for, it's probably going to be fairly successful. But that Rolodex is only so big and you can only go back so many times. I always kind of relate this to everybody's probably got a Mary Kay or a Pampered Chef person in their family. And the first time you get invited to one of those parties, you probably go. But after about the third or fourth call or the email or letter in your inbox, you do everything you can to avoid that person. That's what's happening to their contact. It's like the Pampered Chef consultant. That's what they're going to be forever known as. Yep. It's like those people have called on those contacts so many times, they've burned them. And it doesn't matter. It's kind of like they're crying wolf. Like, hey, I've got another great teaming partner for you. Or, I've got another great opportunity for you. And whoever they're talking to just doesn't want to hear it anymore. So I always say, before you go and drop 10, 12 grand a month on a consultant like that, you know, you really need to do your homework and make sure that's a good fit. Because again, one of the fastest ways to get out of business is to run out of cash.
Yep.
Let's just be honest. Fastest way to get out of business, you're out of money.
Yep.
Can't pay yourself, can't pay anybody else. And one of the fastest ways to do that is to put money out there for things that aren't getting you a return on investment. And so again, there are a lot of great people in those categories that charge tens of thousands of dollars and they are worth every penny, but you really need to be careful about that. You can't just say, oh, well, this guy was a retired one-star general, two-star general. This is going to be a walk in the park. Let's sign him to a six-month contract at 10, 12 grand a month and boom, we're going to be in business.
Yeah.
Those are probably the top three really big mistakes that I see people make out there.
Those are great. I think you hit it on the head with the consultant thing, the Pampered Chef consultants. There are some special people who have a career based on access. They know people and they're connectors. They take a government agency that needs to have a problem solved, and they say, if you take this company and this company and this company, combine them together, they can they're actually chefs. They can combine all those ingredients and solve a problem. Those folks are few and far between, the truly special ones. And the common thread that I've seen is those are the folks that are more focused on accomplishing the mission than getting a commission or keeping that paycheck. The other type, the kind you mentioned, they get stale really fast because being on the government side, I used to dread after a retirement ceremony, it wasn't a month or two before you saw that person back. And this time they have a suit on instead of a uniform. And you know they're going to be pushing something. And just like the Pampered Chef, that you want them to stop coming to the party. You don't go to their parties pretty quickly because it's just such a blatant sales. It's not for your mission. And for government folks, most of them, and all of them should be, but focused on the mission, not on make this pain go away. If you can make their pain go away in a mission sense, that's one thing. If you're giving them pain and offering them nothing on the mission side, they're going to stop taking your calls pretty quickly or stop taking your consultants' calls pretty quickly. You made a very important distinction, I think, a minute ago. There are a lot of good people and a lot of well-meaning people in that business. And I have a lot of friends that are those type of consultants. I got to be careful not to go too far with it. What we're really talking about is, for small businesses, be careful who you sign up with and who you deal with. And think about whether really that type of consulting support, that type of access buying, for lack of a better term, whether that's the best use of your money, or whether there's things that you can do yourself to introduce yourself to these, taking maybe smaller bites of the apple to start with.
Yeah.
If you're going after a multi-year IDIQ that all the big boys are going after, you're going to struggle as a first time or second time or third time small business. Unless it's a small business set aside where you're only competing against other small businesses. A lot of small companies grow to be big small companies or small big companies without ever having a prime contract. They align themselves with the larger players and build a very comfortable business as a second tier, as a subcontractor, instead of going after the prime. And that's another great way to learn. Be a part of big contractors' proposal processes a few times, and it really helps you decide whether you want to be responsible for that yourself.
Yeah. You know, even if you don't win, you get to see what's important. You'll learn things like, oh, what's a red team? Oh, what are all the, if they're using a color-coded process, what's this phase and that phase? You'll learn about so much stuff that you cannot pay for. Like, you cannot pay for that education. That's so important. Because I'm always looking at, how can I learn the stuff I need to know without going to school for it?
Right.
And most of the time, there isn't a school. There isn't a workshop there. You know, they always say you're not going to learn how to ride a bike in a workshop, right? There's so many things you're not going to learn how to do inside a workshop or a 2-day weekend or whatever, but you will learn in a job with somebody.
That's a great tip. Now we've talked about what it takes to win your first contract and talked about some of the things that can prevent you from winning or prevent you from winning more contracts. Before we end our conversation, what's the biggest tip or the final thought that you can give to the listeners?
Well, I think my final thought here is nothing, and I mean nothing, beats old-fashioned rolling up your sleeves and making phone calls, talking to people and just doing the sales work. You know, whether it's calling contracting officers, calling, you know, small business offices, calling old contacts. I had a guy yesterday who was killing me on the phone. He's like, oh, I could call up Lockheed Martin. I could call up this person. I could call up. And finally I said, why don't you? And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, just call him up, man. Just call him up. Make the phone calls. You know, there's just nothing beats that. And I'll tell you, as a small business owner, nothing beats filling your pipeline. If you continually fill your pipeline, a lot of things will work out. So keep doing that. And you know, filling the pipeline covers a lot of mistakes. Yeah. It just does. And so, you know, they've got to close eventually. You can't just keep dumping stuff in the pipeline and it never closes. But if you keep dumping things in the pipeline and keep doing that work, things will work out for you. Almost guaranteed.
That is a great way to end this. What I thought of when you started talking about that was you mentioned before the truism that if you see the opportunity for the first time when it hits FBO, you have very little chance, almost no chance of winning it. On the other side, it's also true. If the first time the contracting officer or the Corps hears about your company is when they get your proposal, you have very little chance of winning it. So having those phone calls, having those conversations up front, so that they're expecting your proposal, they know who you are, and they already think these guys might be a good company to work with. That's really important to winning that contract.
Yeah, super, super important. One final tip there, since you were talking about that, that's so key, is if you call a contracting officer and it's already an acquisition, the last thing you want to say is, I'm calling about RFP XYZ. They're going to shut you down and shut you up. So I always say, hey, I'm just calling you about a couple things. This is not about anything that's currently in acquisition. You know, can I just have a couple
minutes?
Yeah,
ease their mind right there.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you can start asking about whatever. But as to your point, they've heard of XYZ company. So when they do see that RFP come through, they just had a brilliant conversation with you and they really like you. And so it just changes the game. So.
Sure does. Oh, I like the way you wrapped in changing the game right at the end there. Back to the game changers.
Just sneaking it in, right?
Well done. No need to sneak it in here. Thanks so much for spending the time to come on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We really appreciate it.
We'll do this again soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's it for today's podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed the podcast, we invite you to check out the Skyway community at skywaymember.com. The Skyway community is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a business with government contracts. We speak GovCon. To learn more, call us at 877-884-5280 or check us out at skywaymember.com. We'll see you next week.